Easy Shoppen mit PayPal. Geht jetzt auch im Laden. Ob Späti oder Club, mit PayPal bezahlst du auch im Real Life einfach und sicher. Und in Restaurants und Bars gibt's sogar noch 5% Cashback, wenn du mit PayPal zahlst. Tipp dir mehr mit PayPal. Alle Infos auf paypal.de. 5% Cashback nur auf Einkäufe vor Ort in Restaurants und Bars in Deutschland bei kontaktloser Zahlung mit PayPal. Gültig vom 2. Juni bis 19. Juli 2026 für die ersten 850.000 berechtigten Kunden. Maximal 15 Euro Cashback pro Konto. Es gelten Bedingungen auf paypal.de.
This episode is brought to you by our sponsor, Balance of Nature. Go to balanceofnature.com, use the promo code STU, get 35% off your first order, plus a free fiber and spice supplement. It's balanceofnature.com, promo code is STU, 35% off now at balanceofnature.com.
STU does America.
The first presidential debate is coming up this week. Make sure you're up to date with the latest State of the Race podcast. I think we're going to drop a new one tomorrow or Wednesday, one of the two. And then we'll have more about the debate as we go on during the week. Wherever you get your Studios America podcast is where you get this. It's an audio-only product available to you for free in the feed at Studios America. Follow our show at YouTube.com as well. We're going to have bonus stuff there this week, YouTube.com/StuDoesAmerica. We'll do some debate pre-show and post-show. We're going to have coverage on the network on Blaze TV, which I'll be a part of. And then after that's over and before it begins, probably we'll have pre-show previews. Put it all out there for you. I want you to know what's going on with the debate. So I know you're going to be watching it, and we'll have great coverage right here on Blaze TV for you and on the YouTube channel. I found an ally in my war against the 16th Amendment. Repealed the 16th Amendment. Have I mentioned that 100 times? I have. We're going to talk to Dominic Pino from National Review about income tax and getting rid of the 16th Amendment. Is it even possible? How would it happen? Joe Biden continues to promote some interesting characters on his team. I'm hoping for more luggage thieves running our government. I can't wait to find out who this person is. But we're going to start by doing the Dobbs effect. Yes, today, 6/24/24. Is exactly 2 years after 6/24/22. 2 years after Dobbs and the decision came out repealing Roe versus Wade. And we've got, by the way, merch I should tell you about right now. Why not lead off the show with that? 6/24/22 merch is available at StuDoesMerch.com. If you use the code STU10, you'll save 10% off of that. But these are, all it says 6/24/22, little flag on there. It's pretty subtle. People will come up and ask you, what's 6/24/22? And that's something maybe we should be proud of. Maybe we should tell them exactly what that date represents. Maybe the idea that babies live, not something we should run away from. And that's kind of what I want to get into today, because Dobbs has had an interesting effect. It has not had a positive effect, arguably, in some of the elections that have happened since it was overturned. Should that be our top priority? Should that be how we're thinking about this? And how does this relate to what's going to happen this week in the debate and the election that comes up in November? What I can tell you is the Democrats believe this is what's going to win them the election. There's really two things, democracy and this, democracy and abortion. Basically, this is their game plan, because as you may have noticed, their president being in office has not exactly led to a bounty for all of us. This has been a situation where pretty much everything that could have gone wrong has gone wrong. Almost every single part of the policy profile of Joe Biden has been a catastrophe. I mean, Afghanistan, everything overseas has been a disaster, obviously. This stuff has fallen apart since this guy took over. And you can argue whether it's his fault or not, but he's the guy in charge. He's the guy, you know, who's heading this up. So you've seen that go to in the crapper. Then you have the border, which has been a complete and utter catastrophe. The economy has been really, really rough, especially when you look at stuff like inflation. And of course, the policies that are tied to that, and we're going to talk to Dominic Pino a little bit about this coming up as well, in that, like, you take a $1.4, $1.5 trillion deficit, which is a catastrophe by every measure since the founding of our country outside of deep wartime. And then you add on to that another $400, $500 billion. They did it this week. They said, oh, by the way, not going to be 1.4, going to be 1.9. These are the types of changes that are happening in this country. And this has not been good. So what do you do when you have nothing to argue for? You have to bring up things that are going to try to scare people. And abortion is number one on the list. Let me paint you this picture of what they're doing today. Biden campaigned to mark second anniversary of Roe reversal. as he makes abortion rights a key reelection message. Biden's campaign is hosting more than 50 events across the country through Monday's two-year anniversary of the Dobbs v. Jackson Women's Health Organization decision, which overturned the federal legal right to an abortion. The events will feature key Biden surrogates, celebrities, and political figures. Nothing more I want to hear about than, honestly, a bunch of celebrities tell me how wonderful abortion is. That, by the way, did I mention the 6/24/22 merch? It's available now at studiosmerch.com. Maybe wear this proudly. Maybe show everybody that you actually care about children being alive. I know it's a controversial topic. Biden is hitting Trump on abortion rights in video, marking the Dobbs anniversary. And you want to see, and sometimes you think, well, I don't know, maybe Joe Biden isn't really up for this. Maybe he's a little incoherent and doesn't have the energy needed for this type of job. Well, you say that, but then I show you this video and you're going to be totally turned around on that thought. Watch.
Here's what Donald Trump says about your freedom. After 50 years of failure, with nobody coming even close, I was able to kill Roe v. Wade. Yeah. 2 years ago, the Supreme Court justices that Trump handpicked helped overturn Roe v. Wade.
Never before has the court granted and then taken away a widely recognized constitutional right.
New laws banning abortion are taking effect.
Decades of progress shattered just because the last guy got 4 years in the White House. You know what will happen if he gets another four. For MAGA Republicans, Roe is just the beginning. They're going to try to ban the right to choose nationwide. They're coming for IVF and birth control next. We're up against extremism. Send me back to the White House and I'll fight like hell to restore Roe v. Wade and protect American freedom.
How many slurs did you catch in that particular video? What was it, 30 seconds long? I mean, some of it were news clips, so about 30 seconds of him talking. How many times did he slur his words in that one video? And I want you to remember, this is not a live speech. This is something they've recorded probably 10 times to get it to be that good. We have to do something before we get to the debate. Remind me of this in the control room. We have to do something on the setting the expectations too low for Joe Biden, because I think there's something to that, but I think it's more complicated. I don't know. What could the Republicans say to raise expectations on the guy you just saw? Like, if the Republicans came out every time and said, actually, Joe Biden is the best debater and he's really on top of everything, he's way too smart. Why would the American people believe that? What is setting these expectations low is the person involved. The fact that he looks like that every time the American people see him is what's setting expectations low. We should do a monologue on that maybe later this week leading up to the debate. Anyway, Kamala is out there, and we know she has her own set of problems. Though, as I've argued before, I'd frankly take this over what we just saw as far as the Democratic candidate. If I were a Democrat, I'd be like, I don't know, let's just give Kamala a shot. Worst case scenario here is she loses and at least we're rid of her. But here is Kamala doing her shtick.
Hey, everyone. So 2 years ago today, the highest court in our land, the United States Supreme Court, took a constitutional right that had been recognized from the people of America, from the women of America. And thereafter, in state after state, laws have been proposed and passed that will criminalize healthcare providers, sometimes prison for life for healthcare providers, that punish women, that make no exception even for rape or incest, that are threatening the availability of IVF, that are attempting to threaten the availability of contraception. And understand that what the court took, Congress has the power to put back in place. And when Congress passes a law that puts back in place the protections of Roe versus Wade, Joe Biden will sign it into law. Let's all agree. We have to trust women.
Okay. That's nonsense, right? It was filled with lies and, fear-mongering over nonsense. But you have to admit, if you were a Democrat, wouldn't you rather have that than the video I showed you before? I mean, again, she's terrible, but, like, you're judging on a curve here, right? Like, this is, I mean, I don't know. I mean, like, she's terrible too, but I think I'd rather have her than him, as far as not me personally, but like as a person who's, you know, who's on a Democratic campaign operative for, like, I don't know. You want the guy who's like slurring over his word? I don't even understand. OK, Vice President Kamala Harris is keeping the full press on abortion rights under Phoenix stop. Vice President Kamala Harris visiting Phoenix on Monday, making the case against Trump on abortion rights, and marks the second anniversary. Harris will appear with some actress I've never heard of, and the vice president's remarks will focus particularly on abortion rights in the Latino communities, according to Biden-Harris campaign. I mean, there's something so charming about the central aspect of your campaign, meaning more babies being dead. But, like, I think there's a special place when you come out and say, hey, Latino community, we're elect us, because if you elect us, there'll be a hell of a lot less of you. Congratulations, everybody. What a wonderful campaign message. Less Latinos, vote for me. Hard to believe this country is this stupid. But I don't know. Maybe they are. We've proven it before. Maybe we'll prove it again. Kamala Harris says abortion bans are creating a health care crisis. Yeah, for the kids. I mean, I will say the abortion does create a health care crisis for each individual heart you stop from beating. I don't know that necessarily the lack of it is really a problem. And by the way, we've seen a lot of these numbers come out, and I don't know what to make of them. I be honest with you, I don't know what to make of them yet. I've looked at them in depth. There are estimates on both sides. Some estimates say that there have been fewer abortions since Roe v. Wade had been overturned. There are some that say there have been more. I find that hard to believe, frankly. I find it hard to believe. But let's just take it as a fact for a moment here. How are you complaining about abortion access when more abortions are occurring? Again, I don't know that I believe that, but they are touting it as if it's this incredible thing. So I don't know how you're worried about abortion access if more of them are occurring. Here is Kamala Harris talking on Morning Joe in a show we all wish was aborted.
Let's really be clear about how we got here. Because the former president hand-selected three members of the United States Supreme Court with the intention that they would undo the protections of Roe v. Wade.
We agree.
And they did exactly as he intended.
Yay!
And in state after state, we are seeing what I call Trump abortion bans, including states that with a six-week abortion ban, which tells you that these legislators clearly don't know how a woman's body works.
Oh, really?
Or they don't care.
Oh, really? Does Amy Coney Barrett not know how a woman's body works? She's had like 44 kids.
A fundamental right that had been recognized from the people of America, from the women of America, to make decisions about their own body. The notion of it all, that in this year of our Lord, 2024, the highest court in the United States of America would take such a fundamental freedom from its people.
Fundamental freedom to kill
and
children.
And understanding that this is not just a matter that is for debate and discussion and intellectual conversation. The real harm that has occurred every day in America since that case was decided and these laws are being passed. When you look at this issue, most people agree you don't have to abandon your faith. You don't have to abandon your faith or deeply held beliefs to agree. The government should not be telling women what to do with their bodies.
Oh, it's a libertarian.
Consult with their priest, their pastor, their rabbi, their imam.
It's Thomas Massey almost.
But not the government telling women what to do.
Is that Rand Paul? I don't know. All of a sudden, she doesn't want anyone in between the government and your health care. What a crazy, crazy idea. Or excuse me, the person, the patient and their own health care, the doctor and the patient, that relationship is so important. And of course, that's why every single aspect of this industry is regulated to the highest extent possible, including forcing people to buy insurance. But they don't want to have anything to do with the health care market. I mean, look. Again, you're judging on a scale here. You're telling me that Joe Biden could have pulled off that much. That was almost coherent. I mean, it was all nonsense and it was all bullcrap and it was all lies, but it was almost a coherent argument. Of course, they don't believe any of it. It's a whole other situation. First Lady Dr. Jill Biden is out there making campaign stops. You see, they're throwing everybody at this. She made a stop in Pittsburgh. She said radical Republicans are sacrificing the health, the freedom, and the future of women in the name of political agenda. And that's why we're here today when our bodies are on the line. I mean, I can't believe the way they talk about this. The bodies are on the line. When you abort a kid, that's a body being on the line. Our daughters' futures are at stake. Your daughters are the ones not living through these procedures. And we are immovable and unstoppable. Well, I mean, you yourself have argued that this has stopped. So I don't understand how you are so unstoppable. House Dems are going to try to make post-Dobbs comments haunt GOP. Let it haunt them. Let the kids living haunt you. That's a really, usually it's the dead children that haunt you in every horror movie I've ever seen. But in this case, I guess the live children are going to haunt them. The Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee will send mobile billboards to five swing districts, quoting House Republicans who contemporaneously expressed agreement with the Dobbs decision. And it's a bunch of people from California, New York, Pennsylvania, largely. Let's see what else. Trump walks a fine line on abortion. This is kind of maybe the most interesting part of all of this. Allies and activists have big plans for a second term. Trump is trying to say, basically, look, this is a state's thing. Dobbs was states make the decisions. Everyone agrees that's what it should be. Now, of course, not everybody agrees that's what it should be. In fact, half the country completely disagrees with that. They're wrong on that. In fact, to be fair, I happen to fall into that group. I don't agree states should be making the decisions either. When it comes down to children being alive, I don't feel like that should just be a whimsical state-by-state decision. However, it is highly preferable from the idea that no one can make the decision at all. All overturning Roe versus Wade did was allow us to actually have a discussion as to what the correct policy should be. It did not decide what the correct policy should be. When we finally get to a place of humanity, we will decide that keeping kids alive is the right policy. But I don't know when that happens. Maybe that's 100 years in the future. Maybe it never happens. I'm going to be happy to be on that side of the argument and not going to have any problem defending that side of the argument. That is something that we all have to think about, though, right now. This is a big part of the election campaign in 2024. It's the central part of it for Democrats. They believe they can win this election, arguing to kill more Latino children. I don't know if that's going to work. It might. I don't know. Maybe that's a great policy. It's not one I support. Here's a crazy radical idea. I would like more Latino children to be alive. I would like more African-American children to be alive. I know this is going to sound bad, but I'd like more white children to be alive, too. I'd like all children to be alive so they can grow up to be annoying adults that cut me off on the freeway. That's what I desire. I want them to have the chance to be annoying to me. That should be something that's easy to agree on, but instead it's the bad side of the argument. And it's fascinating to see that the good side of the argument is I want more kids dead. What a weird thing to base an election campaign on, but that is what they're doing here. So how does this work in the debate? It's going to come up. It's going to be a central part of this debate. Trump's going to have to do this and do a good job defending it. I will say, I don't know. What is his best defense? His best defense would be to argue about how morally this is a correct position and that our Constitution is supposed to support life. I mean, you go back to our founding documents, you'll find mentions of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. These are important concepts. And I don't think that's where Trump is, though. Trump is, it's not necessarily his first language, the pro-life side of the argument. What he's done for the pro-life side of the argument cannot be argued about. I mean, it's something he should be bragging about, but you could tell he's a little uncomfortable with it. And, you know, he's not the only one on that particular case. I will say it's interesting to watch the Democrats' approach to this in that it's never about the thing that happened, right? It was always about, oh, well, they might overturn Roe versus Wade. When they overturn Roe versus Wade, you notice it's no longer about the overturning of Roe versus Wade. It's now about IVF and contraception. And like, look, you can have disagreements on that. It's not particularly been my area of interest. I know, you know, some people have arguments on both sides. But I mean, it's not really a central push of the Republican Party or certainly Donald Trump. I mean, contraception has been an important part of Donald Trump's life, I promise you that. Or he'd have kids all over the country. There'd be porn stars all over the country birthing children of Donald Trump. That's not his interest. That's not what he's trying to do here. I joke, but like, you know, look, Donald Trump's been known to be a little bit of a playboy. I think contraception is something he's interested in protecting at this point. The leftist messaging has always been to change their predictions because they don't really turn out to be true. Like we were told it was going to be an apocalypse and a Handmaid's Tale situation when Roe versus Wade was overturned. Now they have to say it's IVF or they have to say it's contraception or something else that's coming down the road. Trump is correct to want to brag about overturning Roe versus Wade. It's probably his central achievement. It's probably the most, I mean, it's definitely the most significant thing he will ever accomplish. I mean, the fact that it might save, I mean, in the first estimates were 20, 30, 40,000 children were born that wouldn't have been otherwise. If that's all he did, if that's all you did in your entire life, you'd be pretty freaking proud of that. He should be bragging about it. But I would like him to be a little bit more convinced of it. I'd like him to be a little bit more convinced of his success. And it's a weird thing to say to someone like Donald Trump, who usually isn't too shy about such things. But, you know, where are all his great zingers on this topic? He's seeing this as an election loser. And you know what? I have to admit, he might be right. Maybe it is an election loser. And I know that's what he's focused on, but I just think there are bigger things at play here. And I think defending the right to life is that important. It is to me. He shouldn't run away from it. He should own it. This is his legacy. It's central to his legacy, and nothing he's going to do, I hope, would overturn that in the future. If all he has ever done in his entire life is this one thing, it would be an incredible achievement. He should own it. He should celebrate it. And by the way, I'll mention to you again, if you'd like to celebrate it along with the pro-life movement, 62422. It's a t-shirt, it's a hat, it's available at stewdoesmerch.com. I can't think of anything better to celebrate, because at the end of the day, even though a lot of the people that might be born will annoy you, they will get your order wrong at McDonald's, maybe they will grow up to be a lawyer that's suing you. God only knows who these people will wind up being. But the fact is, they deserve the chance to live and figure that out for themselves. It's not up to us. It's not up to the government. It's not up to Kamala Harris or Joe Biden or even Dr. Jill to take that right away from them. Let me tell you about the Jace case. You know, nobody who looks at our economy thinks that it's going well, and inflation is high, things costs are going up, supply chains are still bumpy, we still have hundreds of medications that are in short supply. And when you think about preparing for what could go wrong, a lot of times people think, well, water, food, Second Amendment, security, there's lots of things to prepare for. And all those things are really valid, but medications are right up there. They're right up there on the same list as water and food. You need to have the things that get you through an illness. I mean, if you go back, look back at, you know, 100 years ago, 200 years ago, 500 years ago, people were dying for all sorts of crazy crap that we don't even think about today. Why? It's not just the fact that we're lucky. It's the miracle of, you know, basic things, you know, even like, you know, antibiotics, right? These things were miracles when they were discovered and have changed human life for the better. The Jace case is a personalized emergency kit that contains essential antibiotics and medications that treat the most common and deadly bacterial infections. 5 life-saving antibiotics for emergency use. What if you couldn't get these? A basic illness could wind up turning really, really dark. There are add-on options too. You can check out all their whole list, but Jace Medical encourages you to take your family's health into your own hands. And that's the most important thing. Jace.com. Enter the code STEW at checkout for a discount on your order. The promo code is STEW at Jace.com. Jace.com. It is the Jace case from Jace Medical.
Meditieren, Yoga, Joggen, nichts entspannt mich.
Echt? Mich entspannt meine Steuer total.
Steuer? Wie Finanzamt? Die Steuererklärung?
Ja, ich habe ganz locker über 1000 Euro zurückbekommen.
Hast du geheime Connections?
Nö, nur die Wieso-Steuer-App.
Wow, und das ist einfach?
Klar, die macht fast alles automatisch.
Plötzlich fühle ich mich so entspannt.
Hol dir dein Geld zurück. Tiefenentspannt mit Wieso-Steuer.
As the purveyor of the Repeal the 16th Amendment mug and t-shirt line at studosmerch.com, I am A man happy to do this segment, and I'm happy to welcome back Dominic Pino to the program. He's the Thomas L. Rhodes Journalism Fellow at National Review Institute, host of the Econception podcast, which you can subscribe to, by the way, wherever you get your podcasts. And he also has a new piece out for National Review. It's called Conservatives Should Be Talking About Eliminating the Federal Income Tax. I will tweet out a link shortly. Dominic, thanks so much for doing this. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me back, Stu. I'm glad we could find a common area of enthusiasm between us.
Yes, I absolutely am enthusiastic about this. And let me start from the very beginning here. I just think, like, conservatives need some aspirational things. There's a lot of this, like, hey, we should reduce the income tax by 4% for the upper middle bracket. And, like, as exciting as that is for me and maybe you, maybe not for most people, I think we have to have that sort of aspirational thing that the left seems to have for almost every topic, a high watermark to shoot for. And I think repealing the 16th Amendment is a legitimate target.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And that's basically one of the reasons I wanted to write this piece, was just to remind conservatives that actually it would be great if we could get rid of the income tax. Just because we've had it for a really long time does not mean it's inevitable. We didn't have an income tax for a very long part of this country's history. And the income tax, quite frankly, has enabled the growth of big government by providing a very large revenue base for the government to work off of. And we've seen huge increases in government spending and so on since the creation of the income tax. And we've seen a lot of states at the Republicans at the state level have been successful repealing the income tax or flattening the income tax and eventually trying to phase it out in their states. And so we'd like to see that energy spread to the federal level, too.
Now, immediately when you say something like this, Dominic, the pushback is going to be, how are we going to pay for everything that we have? I mean, we spend a lot of money. My understanding is that we don't pay for everything we have now. So if we got rid of the income tax, what would we do?
That's right, Stu. We have a really hard uphill battle in terms of spending and getting things under control. One of the things that we'd have to do in order to get rid of the income tax at the federal level is just stop spending so much money to begin with. That would mean reforming entitlements. That would mean reducing a lot of different welfare programs, subsidy programs that haven't worked out very well and eat up a large part of the federal budget for very little in return. It would mean that we would no longer be able to run enormous deficits every year, which is what we're scheduled to do, according to the president's budget, for the next 10 years at least. And so there's a lot to do there. It's a much harder pull than it would be for the state level, as I mentioned before, because most states have balanced budget amendments and they generally have better finances than the federal government does. So they're in a much better position to do a big reform like this. But getting the federal government there is going to be a decades-long process, but that should be sort of, as you said before, the aspiration for conservatives. It should say tax reform is a decades-long project to eliminate the income tax.
Dominic, can you talk for a second about the effects of the income tax? Because it's not just like, okay, we're raising a bunch of money. This distorts our economy in a million different ways.
That's right. All taxes are bad, but some are worse than others. And the income tax is on the worse side of the spectrum. And that's because it distorts saving and investment. It basically makes a lot of different cases of double taxation, where you get taxed when you make money and then you get taxed again when you spend it or save it. It would be much better to just tax consumption, which is what we see, again, state governments with sales taxes. Those are great revenue raisers, and they're much less economically distorted because they allow you to tax a wide variety of things at a very low rate. You know, most state sales taxes are around 5%, and so those distortive effects don't play as big of a role, and it's much easier it's much harder for politicians to raise those taxes by a lot because it's very visible right on your receipt. You see that nice 5% at the bottom. So there's real accountability and transparency there, which we don't often have with the income tax, which gets withheld from your paycheck every 2 weeks. And then you have to, you know, do your tax return once a year.
Let's go to the other side of this for a second, because, of course, you have the revenue side, you have the spending side, but then that all leads to a deficit and a debt. And we just got a report, was it last week, where they are upping now the estimate from about 27% up to $1.9 trillion in deficit this year alone. That breaks the non-COVID all-time record, which was last year, of $1.7 trillion. And it's fascinating to see, like, I don't know, I feel like we had a situation, it's sort of a weird sort of standoff for many years where Republicans would say we needed to cut spending and we needed to lower the deficit. And Democrats would say they didn't really care about that. And then a lot of times Republicans would get into office and they wouldn't necessarily do such a great job on keeping those promises. But at least there was a push and pull going on. Now it feels like nobody talks about it. Nobody brings it up. There's no candidates that seem to really even care passionately about this stuff at all, which is just making things much, much worse.
I think that's totally true at the level of presidential politics. We've seen both presidential nominees promise that they're not going to do anything about entitlements, which is the biggest source of our debt problem. The crazy thing is the second biggest source of our debt problem is our debt, because our interest payments are the second driver of government spending. And they just this year, we passed the defense budget for interest payments. So we're paying more just to finance our other spending than we are paying for all of the military and all of national defense put together. So this is a really bad spot to be in. And you're right, there have been very little leadership from presidential candidates on it. There are a handful of people in Congress that care about it. Senator Bill Cassidy from Louisiana, for example, has a proposal out to reform Social Security and get that under control. But without any presidential leadership, it's going to be really, really hard, if not impossible, to actually make any changes.
Yeah, and it's kind of fascinating to sit back and watch all of this happen, because, I mean, one of the central things that we keep talking about when it comes to presidential politics is how, you know, there's a lot of grievance politics out there. There's a lot of issues that are kind of the side. But the thing that Americans keep saying they care about, right, is the economy and inflation. And while they will talk about inflation, they are almost abandoning one of the big causes of it. Like, if we were talking about all this spending and getting that under control, we would have an answer to the inflation, not just complaining about it. And instead, Republicans don't even really address that side of it at all.
Yeah, for perspective, the budget deficit in 2009, the worst year of the Great Recession, was about $1.4 trillion. Now, we expect big deficits in a recession, especially in a recession like 2009, which was the worst we've had since the Great Depression. Now we are running higher deficits than that in an economy where where unemployment is 4% or lower, where we're not in a recession, where the economy is expanding, slower than it was, but it is still expanding. And we're not involved in any major foreign wars. We're not involved in any kind of conflict or emergency or pandemic anymore that would justify that kind of spending. And so we're not even close to balance, and it's getting worse. And the driver of that is entitlement and interest.
I mean, and this is our peacetime dividend right now. This is what we're looking at, which is terrifying. What does this look like if we do have a major recession, or if we do have a war? I mean, we're kind of on the verge, seemingly, of the last couple of years. It feels like both of those are possibilities. What does this look like if one of those things happens?
Much, much worse. The Congressional Budget Office's their long-term projections are already very sour, but they're actually based on relatively positive assumptions. They're based on the assumption that interest rates stay around 4% for the next 30 years, which they're above right now, and they could stay above and go higher. We don't know. They're based on assumptions of no wars, no recessions. Well, in the next 30 years, I mean, certainly one of those things will probably happen, right? So we're in a much worse place. In past times when we had very large deficits, it was because of some kind of acute crisis like this. During World War II, we ran huge deficits, but then the war ended and then the deficits went away. During the end of the Cold War, we ran very large deficits to outspend the Soviet Union. Then we won the Cold War and the deficits went away. But then during COVID, we ran huge deficits during the pandemic, which you'd expect, but then the deficits didn't go away. And they're getting bigger. At the end of 2025, we're looking at a situation where we're going to hopefully extend most of the tax cuts from 2017. That was a good tax bill. It should be extended, but that's going to blow another hole in the budget. How are we going to fix how are we going to fix that? We're going to need to cut spending elsewhere. And there just isn't an appetite for doing that in Washington right now. And a lot of it's because politicians are not telling the truth and they're not being honest with you about the trade-offs involved in government budgeting.
Yeah, and of course, these assumptions don't assume that no politician's going to have a wonderful new idea for a brand new program sometime in the next 30 years either. Hey, Dominic, we got about 40 seconds left. Can you give me the elevator pitch for your new podcast? I'm really excited to hear it.
Yes, the podcast is called Econception. We look at the economic issues of the day. Usually first half will be an interview with me and one top econ expert talking in depth about an issue. And then the second half will just be me talking solo on a couple of topics that'll be in the news. And then we have the paper of the episode, which is we highlight one famous econ paper that everyone should read. It's with the American Institute for Economic Research. I encourage everybody to check it out and subscribe wherever they get podcasts.
Yeah, definitely go subscribe to this because we actually do have to talk about policy every once in a while. It's really important to our country's future. And Dominic does a great job analyzing it. Dominic, thanks so much for coming on. Dominic Pino, be sure to check out the new piece, Conservatives Should Be Talking About Eliminating the Federal Income Tax, over at National Review. And subscribe to Econception wherever you get your podcast. Dominic, thanks for coming back on the program, man. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Stu. Always a pleasure.
By the way, did I mention StuDoesMerch.com? Repeal the 16th Amendment. Mugs, T-shirts available now. Maybe if you're moving into a new house, you want to celebrate, you can go to Stu Does Merch and get some wonderful merch over there. And then when you're getting your real estate agent, you can be sure that you have the best one in your area after you've gone to realestateagentsitrust.com. They pair you with the best real estate agent in your area, someone who knows the best practices, someone who's you can understand the housing market, someone who's a team leader and a closer, someone you can trust. If you're thinking about buying or selling a home, you know this market has been wild. I mean, home values are through the roof, but the mortgage rates are up there. How do you calculate what a house is even worth these days? RealEstateAgentsITrust.com can get you the agent that can help you boil all that down, not to mention get all the paperwork right, make sure you're not paying too much. It's RealEstateAgentsITrust.com. It's a free service to you. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com.
Kaffee in seiner besten Form. Mit Cubo wird jeder Kaffee auf Knopfdruck zum Genussmoment. Denn mit der neuen Cubo One Kapselmaschine von Chibo genießt du feinsten Spitzenkaffee aus besonderen Anbaugebieten. Vollmundige Aromen dank innovativer Press-Brew-Technologie und über 17 Sorten Kaffee für jeden Geschmack. Erlebe Premium-Kaffee schon ab 29 Euro. Entdecke jetzt die Cubo Kapselmaschinen in deiner Chibo-Filiale und auf chibo.de.
We have a kind of a tradition here on the program, just highlighting some of the crazy people that the Biden administration hires and promotes and gives incredible responsibility to. Now White House is promoting a Biden official who compared police to slave patrols and wants to abolish ICE. This is typical, right? This is a very typical story where we go back and look at their social media and find all these crazy things they've said. This is just a small sampling. Praying for Baltimore, but praying even harder to end a capitalistic police state motivated by explicit and implicit racial biases. Of course, apt time to recall that modern day police system is a direct evolution of slave patrols and lynch mobs. It's funny, they just can't find people who like police. There's nobody ever around who's just like, you know, police are kind of great. They protect us and take risks to help us. They just never find those people to work in their administrations. Now, in 2018, way back in 2018, this guy whose name is, what is it, Tyler Cherry, he called for Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, to be abolished. He was arguing for Palestine on social media in 2014 during the Gaza war, in which Palestinian forces led by the group Hamas, a terrorist group, launched hundreds of rockets into Israel. He was cheering on Hamas, cheering in bars to ending the occupation of Palestine. No shame and no shame and F your glares. Is what he said in 2014. Republican Party were focused on white grievance politics. The Tea Party was never about debt deficit, but about racism and white grievance. I mean, a lot of this very, very standard fare, right? Like, really hardcore leftist stuff, hate the police, hate, you know, Republicans, blah, blah, blah. And another proud tradition here on Stu Does America is just letting you see these people. Like, this is the guy. He's in the the bottom right-hand corner. It looks like maybe rose petals stapled to his chest. I don't know exactly how that works. Surrounded by a bunch of dudes with mustaches and dresses on. You might say, well, isn't it interesting how they all have dresses on? Also interesting how they all have mustaches. I don't know why. It's just fascinating. It's like, you know, maybe there's no attempt to be passable, I will say, on this particular photo. And then another one right here, a beautiful dress thing that Tyler is wearing. Wonderful, wonderful guy, I'm sure. I would like to see the meet cute with Sam Brinton, the former official, as they kind of come together, maybe both pick up the same luggage to steal. And that's how the romantic comedy begins. I think it will be a wonderful story, and I hope he does a great job. By the way, he did respond to this. He's like, my past comments on social media are not representative of who I am today. I support the Biden administration. And then that's it, right? Like, everybody else who tries that and says, yeah, all the crap you found on me. Like, when I was 13 years old, I had a bad joke that was kind of offensive in a way. And now I'm trying to be a quarterback in the NFL and everyone's trying to cancel me. They never get away with that. But this guy will. This guy is able to say, I just denounce everything I've been saying up until last week because I want this job. And everyone's just going to accept it. So there we are. Tyler Cherry, our new hero. In the Biden administration, we'll see how all of this plays out. Since 2007, Folds of Honor has provided life-changing scholarships to the spouses and children of America's fallen and deceased in combat. And honestly, they've been doing this for a while now. They've already awarded 51,000 scholarships and more than $200 million so far. This is for military heroes, our first responders. And, you know, the need is great, but we can kind of work together here in a fun way to make sure that no qualified applicant is turned away. Why do I say that? Well, Flying Ace Spirits have aligned with Folds of Honor to ensure the children of our American heroes receive the education they deserve. Proud supporters of Folds of Honor, Flying Ace Spirits has had the privilege of providing hope for families across the country, and they are going to have, I think it's 4 scholarships awarded quarterly this year. So if you help, you can make people's lives actually better. And the way you do that is by drinking delicious spirits. FlyingAceSpirits.com. FlyingAceSpirits.com. You can scan the QR code on the screen if you'd like as well. We'll get the link in the show notes too. When you are purchasing a bottle of Flying Ace, you will also be donating to Folds of Honor. So you get to maybe a little donation for yourself, first of all, with your Flying Ace Spirits, but then you also can support a great cause, Folds of Honor. Use the promo code America when you sign up. You get free shipping on every order. It's FlyingAceSpirits.com. The promo code is America. FlyingAceSpirits.com. Promo code America. Well, a left-wing fact checker has admitted that Trump never actually called Charlottesville neo-Nazis very fine people. And this is, we did a show, I don't know, early on in the run of the show where we kind of did a debunking of that narrative, which, look, you can agree or disagree with how Trump handled that situation, but you know, it's just frankly true that he did not say that neo-Nazis were very fine people. He didn't say that. That's not what he said. In fact, he very specifically said the opposite. Snopes is the group we're talking about, and their headline is, no, Trump did not call neo-Nazis and white supremacists very fine people. They rated that claim false. They did add an editor's note after they got the pressure from the kind of the pushback on this. They say some readers have raised the objection that this fact check appears to assume that Trump was correct in stating that there were very fine people on both sides of the Charlottesville incident. This is not the case. The fact check is aimed to confirm what Trump actually said, not whether what he said was true or false. For the record, virtually every source that covered the Unite the Right debacle concluded that it was conceived of, led by, and attended by white supremacists, and therefore Trump was wrong. I mean, it was definitely attended by white supremacists. That doesn't mean that everyone there was a white supremacist, of course, was the point. And of course, they never addressed the other side of this, which was there's plenty of violence on the left as well. Not necessarily as much at that event, although there was some scuffling going on there. But certainly over this entire time period, this was going on. Just another example. But it's nice that they actually do have that on the record, at least, because I think a lot of people, even on the right, kind of believe that is what he said. Maybe it was a mistake. Maybe he overstated it, but that's what he said. In actuality, he didn't even say it. Elections have been a little unusual lately, and that's putting it mildly. For the past couple of decades, pretty much every losing presidential candidate has claimed that the system was rigged or the winner cheated. You know, Al Gore, Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump. John Kerry, by the way, he lost, and he said that as well. So with the 2024 election right around the corner, both sides are kind of asking, can we trust the system? Sarah Gonzalez and the Blaze Originals team decided to head to Michigan, a pivotal swing state, to find out. After the 2016 presidential election, Michigan completely changed its voting laws. Could this have an effect on elections in the future? I think quite possibly it could. We're here to answer the questions that are most important to you. You know, dead voters, voter ID laws, George Soros-funded secretaries of state, all under the microscope in the latest Blaze Originals documentary. It's available now, only on Blaze TV. Voter Fraud Exposed: How Elections Can Be Stolen. Use voter fraud as the code at blazeoriginals.com/stew. You get $30 off an annual subscription to Blaze TV. blazeoriginals.com/stew.